Hello, buenos dias, salam alaikum, jambo. My name is Pamela Spar, and I'm the Associate Director of Justice Building at the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, and I'd love to welcome you all to the workshop, Organizing Our Congregations More Effectively for Social Justice, number 322 in the program book. UUSC is really excited to be able to offer this workshop in conjunction with some really incredible leaders in our denomination. We feel that at this particular political moment in the life of our nation and the life of the world, we as Unitarian Universalists need ever more to be as visionary, effective, and strategic in our social justice work and our public witness. Justice Building at UUSC was created about a year ago in part to help facilitate individuals and congregations to engage in deeper and bolder advocacy that brings inspiring results which build upon themselves and grow. And we're hosting this workshop as one way to carry out our mission. This workshop also came about over the last year when I engaged in a very extensive listening process to both lay leaders and many clergy members in our denomination. And I discerned two things. One, a lot of people are really frustrated with how their congregation is functioning in terms of social justice. And maybe that's why at least some of you are here. And secondly, there's a trend going on for both small, medium, and large-sized congregations in terms of rethinking how they do social justice and how they are organized to do that. So we wanted to take advantage of both of those trends in order to share some expertise and see what we can do to do better work together. Not surprisingly, I'd just like to say that want to just check if any of you are feeling this in your congregation in terms of common pitfalls. How many of you are in congregations, and this is totally confidential, we'll not take names or you won't be on camera, that you're feeling there's a lot of very scattered and diffuse energies, that you're like a mile wide and a quarter inch deep? Okay. How about you're really kind of a bit disappointed in terms of your actual impact in the community? Okay, our panelists are just noting this. Okay. How many of you feel that your congregation tends to be more reactive rather than proactive? Okay. How about that you're more focused on hosting events rather than operating from a long-term strategic plan and long-term relationships with community groups? Okay. And finally, you tend to operate in silos of different topics that don't talk to each other or strategize together. Aha. Okay. I think we have our work cut out for us panelists. And the list, I'm sure, can go on. But we really have some great, great folks here. The purpose of the workshop is threefold. One is to provide some really inspiring examples of what congregations are doing and some lessons learned. Two, to offer some specific tools to evaluate how well you're doing and how you might rethink a few things. And three, to provide a little space to do some strategizing and problem solving together. We know that in an hour and 15 minutes, there's no way we can be comprehensive, and obviously your congregation's size and location and culture are important factors in determining what makes sense for you. But we've selected our speakers very carefully in order to provide a range of ideas suitable for a variety of circumstances. So I'd just like to quickly introduce our speakers and say a little bit about the structure of the workshop, and then we're going to get started. Our first speaker is the gentleman to my left, Reverend Nathan Hollister. And Nathan is a third-generation UU. Let's give you a shout-out for that. Nathan has been a community organizer since he was a teenager. He leads the Ministry of Sacred Fire Unitarian Universalist, which plants and grows covenanted communities of support for life and social justice. One of the reasons why I asked NATO to be a part of it is because as we grow into more effective justice making in the 21st century, I think it's really important for us to look at new, different ways of doing that outside of our typical congregational walls, particularly forms that speak to the interests of young adults. So I think NATO is going to inspire us also with that. NATO serves is going to join the board of UUSC as of July 1, and I must admit I didn't know that when I invited him, so we're not double dipping here. He's also a faculty person at Meadville Lombard, and he's on the UUA Commission on Appraisal. And he lives and makes trouble with his partner, Maddie, in central North Carolina. Welcome, NATO. He's going to kick us off by offering a big picture view of what a healthy social justice ministry looks and feels like in the 21st century. He's going to be introducing us to some basic vocabulary, the difference between a missional and an attractional congregation, and give you, as I mentioned before, a sneak peek at an exciting new formation of church, one without walls. Next in the lineup, we have Reverend Allison Miller. And Allison is the senior minister of the Morristown Unitarian Fellowship in New Jersey since 2005. She's an active leader in our denomination and in interfaith and justice efforts in her community, including service as president of the UU Church of the Larger Fellowship and on the boards of UU Legislative Ministry of New Jersey and the Morristown Interfaith Clergy Council and the United Way of Northern New Jersey. She does not sleep. I'd like to just make it really clear that this workshop was planned a really long time ago, and Allison was invited before she declared her presidency, her candidacy for the UUA presidency. As you know, UUSC does not take a position on any candidate for office. So we're going to use Morristown as a kind of case study at how we take all the concepts that NATO is going to talk about and then put them into practice by reorganizing the life of the church and its external ministries, particularly in a highly politically conservative area. That might be of relevance to some of you. Finally, our capstone at the end of the table is Reverend Scott Ossung, who has sought to bring together congregational ministry and work for social justice since his early days as an activist on a church, college, and seminary campuses in the U.S. and South Africa in the 1980s. Scott, as a Lutheran pastor on the southwest side of Chicago, helped to found a community-based youth development and organizing initiative, and then went on to do multi-state organizing with the American Friends Service Committee. So one of the reasons I was really excited to invite Scott is because he embodies interfaith organizing, and that's one of the themes, of course, of GA this year. Since finding his UU grounding at Third Unitarian in Chicago, he has served congregations in Oak Park and Quincy, Illinois, and in Hobart, Indiana. And now he directs the fledgling UU Advocacy Network of Illinois, which we know is going to flourish under his leadership. Scott's going to close us out because he's going to provide a second case study that's much more narrow and focused in terms of explaining how Unity Temple in Oak Park added a very, very successful community organizing effort to its justice ministry, and he's going to talk about the difference that that has made in the congregation. Scott is here because our original guest, Alan Taylor, was not able to be here. We're then going to go into a period of Q&A and discussion, and then we'll close by offering a few tools and other resources that you might use when you go home. So all in about an hour and 10 minutes. So put your seatbelt on and let's get ready to party. Okay, NATO, please take it away.
All right, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone.
I think I can stand up. Yeah. Should we do that?
Is that better? A little bit more?
Okay.
Do you want them to go to the podium? Beth, is that going to cause problems with the camera?
Okay, great. Great. Thank you. Yes, thank you for asking up front so no one's straining to see. I'll start out with just a couple pieces of overview to what it looks like when we talk about congregational social justice. And I'll talk a little at the end about what our communities, our covenanted communities, which are really justice-seeking communities and are inspired. The inspiration for those is the line in our UU hymn, Spirit of Life, to give life the shape of justice. So we explore what does that actually look like by asking questions like, what does interdependence look like on a Tuesday morning when the babysitter cancels or something like that? And we have can we respond to that in a way as a community? So I'll get to that. But first, I want to talk about how we do congregational social justice, and then I'll get into this material over here. One of the things that I've noticed is that we spend a great deal of our time trying to choose an issue. I mean, first we have the thing, okay, so you know that game where you try to hit the whack-a-mole? So that's what one of my ministerial colleagues talked about, how we do social justice. It's kind of the whack-a-mole thing where our social justice committee sends $20 to 50 different organizations, and that's what we do. So a lot of congregations are really seeking focus, which I think is a really good idea. But I think we often spend so much energy looking at how we engage in that process of picking something that will make the least people angry. And what we should really be thinking about is building capacity to have an impact on every issue. That's what our congregations exist for. So it's not the issues aren't the issue, is what I want to say there. So many of you might be familiar with some of this this version of how we go about social justice, essentially the strategies. This is actually in the UUA Social Justice Handbook, that we do education, service, witness, advocacy, and community organizing. Is that kind of familiar to some folks? So I'm going to talk about the ways that we do those things poorly and the ways that we do those things well. And I am going to implicate myself in the doing poorly too, so I'm not pointing any fingers outwardly. But the first thing, we take education or awareness raising, and we say things like, if only everybody knew about this, it would stop. Well, guess what? It won't. Education is kind of step zero toward making change, and we often take it as the only step. There's a thing that we refer to as the opiate of the public declaration. You know, if we took a stand on that, we made a statement about that, we're raising awareness about that, well, that's not how we see change and transformation happening. So at its poorest or least effective, education is just awareness raising or saying we took a stand on that. At its best, in our communities and in our congregations, we can become a praxis community, and praxis really means action and reflection. So I can give an example of how we do that in our Sacred Fire communities. In our communities, every member is a member of a small group. So you join a small group ministry circle as part of your membership. And those small groups can serve as action and reflection or praxis groups. So instead of seeing ourselves as groups that raise awareness, seeing ourselves, our congregations and our communities as praxis communities that are involved in learning and growing and building that capacity that's necessary to respond to these issues, any issue, as I said. The second one is service. The way that we often go about service is really using a charity model, right? And I want to say something that perhaps might be challenging. I hope it's challenging. Charity models of justice, social justice and social service work, charity models are not consistent with UU theologies of covenant. Because So why is that? So what is a covenant? We are a covenantal people. Covenantal relationships are free, they're voluntary, mutual, non-coercive relationships. So what our UU faith calls us to do when we engage in social justice is ask at every turn, what relationships are we creating? What do they look like? So if you have just a standard charity model, and I know I'm generalizing, I recognize that, but the standard charity model does not create covenantal relationships, right? It does not create mutual relationships. So we can give an example from some of the work that we've done in North Carolina. We were involved with a food distribution that every Sunday there were volunteers, mostly white college students, would go and get boxes of food and put them down on the ground, and mostly women of color, immigrants, and refugee people would come and grab the food, and that was it. And we had these volunteers. And the relationship, the power dynamics were obviously terrible. The race dynamics and gender dynamics were obviously terrible. So what we did is we went in and started speaking with the people who were engaged in the program and saying, what do we need? And they said, well, we should line up, and we should, and so we said, okay, well, you be in charge of lining folks up. And someone else said, well, we should lay out the food really nicely and do that. And this process went on and on until now that there are no volunteers. Everyone there is a participant. And so now when people from the community say, like, hey, I hear you have a great food distribution program, you're giving away 500 pounds of fresh produce every week, can I come volunteer? We say, no, we don't need volunteers, but you can come and participate. And a step farther from that is that now we're beginning monthly to have a potluck community meal, a community picnic, once a month as participants in this food distribution program. So it's opening up the opportunity to be creating relationships that could be called covenantal. So that's what I mean by shifting our models and asking at every turn, what relationships are we creating? The third is witness. And we often see this in vigils and standing or sitting with our with people and trying to be in solidarity. And I'd also put into here a lot of our tactics of protests and marches and these sorts of things. And one of the issues, I think, at its worst is when we are engaged continually in a mindset of protest, where we're always against, we're anti, we're reactive to things. And I'll talk about this a little bit later, but what I would like to invite us into instead of that is the mindset or approach of transformation. And that's a different thing. And I'll get into that a little bit later. The next one is advocacy, and I think there's an issue here. We have this model where we think that we need to be vying for influence in the public square. And I want to push against that and say what we should be building is power. Power is what makes change. And so we often go about influence as trying to influence elected officials or influence decision makers, where we're afraid to actually build community powers, the power of communities to dictate their own futures. So one way that we've done this in Carrboro, North Carolina, is we started something called a solidarity network. And what we do is work often with tenants. We had a campaign where tenants were being price gouged on water bills, so exorbitant bills, often of non-English speaking people. And so we got with them and wrote a letter, a demand letter, saying this must stop by this date. And we called up all our friends, and they called up their friends, and we went to the offices of the apartment building, multiple apartment sites, and huge crowds, and we just stood back and while the tenants themselves delivered these letters. And this tactic works incredibly well the more elders and children you have. So we've done this actions with day laborers who work and are not paid. It's called wage theft. And when companies and individuals in our town know that 100 grandmothers and children will be in front of your house or business when you rip someone off, that's culture change. That shifts the culture of what is okay in our communities. So it's we look at it as standing on the side of love, but kind of on a weekly basis instead of once a year or so at an event. The last piece is community organizing. And I put kind of community organizing to solidarity. At its worst, community organizing is about organizing those other people that need our help. This might be familiar. At its worst, and I can implicate myself in that in that as well. There's a term from a Spanish philosopher from Mexico City, Spanish speaking, and the term is nosotroficación. And nosotros in Spanish is we, and so nosotroficación is we making. So we use that concept of making we, and when we apply, instead of othering folks and organizing that community over there, when we approach it our mission is to become a we with others, then we're really building solidarity. And I can say a few words about solidarity, and then I'll close just by talking about our community that we're planting all over the country. 5 points on solidarity. One, and this is on essentially how to engage with people that we don't know yet or communities that we aren't yet part of, right? So one is having an awareness of our own social position and whose priorities we're operating on. In the solidarity network that I spoke about, we're operating on the agenda of the people who are directly experiencing exploitation or discrimination in some way. Two is that we lean into risk. Solidarity means risk, taking on some of the risk. And so I often have a problem when we use terms like being an ally, as if I'm an ally in helping you with your problem. So we try to be provocative and say we need to be accomplices in one another's liberation. So accomplicing. Also being missional, which I'll close with. Being missional means to go to them. Our congregations, as Pam spoke about, most of our congregations and our best congregations are wonderful at being attractive. We create beautiful, loving religious communities that are life-giving, and we try to invite people to come to them, and this is wonderful. One of the issues there is that puts all the risk on other folks to come see how cool we are. I mean, we know how cool we are, and they should come, and they'll find out. And once they do, they'll know. But being missional is kind of the other half of what to do. And being missional means to go to. So that's part of the leading idea of Sacred Fire Unitarian Universalist is that it's a missional ministry that goes to the community, mostly using small group ministry, to organize justice-seeking communities that support one another. Now, I'll end with a sixth thing that is missing from that list, and I think this is really how transformation is made, and that is off a quote from Buckminster Fuller. Buckminster Fuller said that to change something, you don't fight the existing reality. To change something, you build a different model, a better model that renders the old model obsolete. So what he's talking about is building alternative, liberatory institutions to those that exist in society now. I'll give an example from our own history. Early on in our congregationalist forebears were making their own decisions inside their congregations and calling their own leadership. Hundreds of years before we had democratic societies. And it was literally that practice, that working model of what the world could look like that was being played out in congregations that was the example for the American Revolution and democracy. So he said, look, in our religious communities, we're electing our leaders and making our own decisions together, but out here we're living in a monarchy. So I want to put to you that our work, our social justice work in our congregations, is to be experimenting with and building alternative institutions that look like the world we dream about and the world that our hearts know is possible. Now, I'll leave and we can talk more later perhaps, and I can give information is on the table about Sacred Fire Unitarian Universalists, but we just finished planting our fifth covenanted community, this one in Oakland, California, and these are mostly non-UU, mostly young adult, but many awesome boomers as well, and these are communities that practice interdependence in ways of mutual aid with one another, and we learned a lot of lessons from the Black Church and the immigrant church that serve not just spiritual functions and spiritual fulfillment, but also how to support one another in life. This has been essential for we started out as pretty much all low-income food service workers, and it was just, we needed to figure out how to get past life's obstacles to community, to even be in community, and Sunday morning wasn't an option for us, you know, because you work late on Saturday night or you're working brunch, essentially. And the other piece that we practice is solidarity. These are deliberate communities that practice interdependence and solidarity. And Sacred Fire UU, there is no mechanism of support for ministries like this in our UUA yet. So that means the only way that we're able to do this is because a number of individual UUs provide sustaining funds, $10 a month, $100 a month. And so far, we've figured out that it costs just $10,000 to get a covenanted community fully self-sufficient, and it takes about a year. So this stuff is fast. We've so far been invited to about 10 other cities in the United States for us to come. They're thirsty for UU theology, that are thirsty for communities of belonging, thirsty for opportunities to change the world, but aren't interested in church. So I want to leave you that and encourage you to grab some of the little flyer over there. I encourage you to consider supporting this ministry, these kind of ministries that we talk about, being in relationship with the millennials and the nuns. We're doing it. We need support for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nader. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of follow-up questions. Allison, are you able to be at the podium?
Yes. So hello, my name is Allison Miller, and I'm going to open with a story, especially because so many people resonated with the sort of scattered approach of social justice. I saw a lot of hands fly up. And one of the things at the Morristown Unitarian Fellowship that we wanted to address was more impactful, more focused, more meaningful experiences of creating change in the community. And I recall meeting with Faye Waddleton Smith, who was the president of Planned Parenthood, although at the time she was working at a gender justice think tank. And she shared this, that she had been accused as an African-American woman of spending too much time on women's issues and not making a difference enough in the black community, to which she responded to that question, which actually came up that night at All Souls in New York City. All of us have choices to make. There are many vibrant, vital issues that we need to lean into that will make a difference in the community that we are living in. And if we decide that we're going to make a difference on every single issue as an individual, for example, we will move forward imperceptibly. But if we make a choice and make it our life's journey, then we will be able to make a deep impact. And of course, the truth is that women's issues are intersectional with issues of so many other groups. So it was not a choice to only affect women, but really a choice that rippled out. And I always hold that in my heart because I observe the social justice argument, and maybe you've seen this in your congregation, where a congregation social action committee will argue over what's more important. Do we need to create peace, or do we need to end the destruction of our earth through environmental degradation? Which one's more important? And then you hear one person argue, well, if we're going to blow one another up, then what's the point of working for the environment? We won't be here anyway. And someone says, well, if you are spending all your time working for peace, and we're all here, but we disappear because the earth is destroyed, what's the point of that work? I grew up also as a Unitarian Universalist and witnessed that argument so many times as a child and as a youth that all I knew was I was not going to do that, because that argument gets us nowhere. All of our congregations need to ask choices. So these were the questions we asked ourselves. How are we uniquely suited as a congregation to make a powerful impact on what issues, What are the combination of skills and passions and interests that lie in our community? Who are our community partners today? Who could be our community partners? Who lives with us in the Morristown area and in the environs? And what are the issues that are calling out for a Unitarian Universalist community to make a difference? And so part of our goals in terms of transitioning our social justice program was to move from the scattered approach to one that was focused and thoughtful and woven into every part of our congregational life together. And I'll begin with another quick story, too. We began, and I encourage you, how many of you have a social justice example in the life of your congregation that you're excited about? It's a great story. You made a difference. Good. There were some hands there, too. We decided that we would look to our history and see where was somewhere we made a powerful difference and understand why that happened. So in Morristown, the community is about 20-something percent Latino immigrants, and our congregation also has both documented and undocumented immigrants in our congregation. And we had been studying the impact of the tensions of immigration in our community, and tensions were really rising where I'm located. And in fact, our mayor had decided to apply to be the first in the state of New Jersey and one of the first of a handful to have our officers deputized as immigration and customs officials. And he wanted to sweep the streets clean of immigrants. We had community partners. We were already in dialogue around this issue in terms of both nonprofits and other houses of worship that had come together to try to do something about this. In addition to that, it was the recession was hitting. People were concerned about fair wages for immigrants and for everyone. Wage theft was a really extreme issue where I'm located. And we had this experience of building a worker center, a connection called Pathways to Work Together. And we unpacked what was powerful about that experience and why we had been able to move the conversation in the community forward so far. And it was there were a few things. Number one, it had been woven into the spiritual life of the fellowship. Our Sunday morning services are, and I appreciate what you lifted up about education, but I also think our lifelong learning programs can be an opportunity for spiritual growth. So people were really reflecting deeply on what it meant to us as Unitarian Universalists to be engaged in the work of immigration justice. And we were in dialogues with partners in the community. We were connected to a workers' collective, an immigrant rights collective, and a community service agency that had worked with the waves of immigrants for a hundred years so far. And we found that there was passion. Everyone in the congregation identified with economic justice and with the obvious challenges that immigrants in our congregation and in the community were facing. And so we took some of these lessons and said, what would it look like? What would it look like if we didn't have a social justice council that had maybe eight people on it who determined everything we did? What if it wasn't the social justice council wasn't the work of those eight passionate people, but rather a ministry of the whole congregation, the way that we experienced when we were engaged in the work of immigrant justice and economic justice in our community? And we met, and you have to begin as you want to end. If it's going to be a ministry of the whole, one of the things we did was we had a social justice reinvention task force that gathered and had a member from the Board of Trustees, the minister, religious education, social justice, finance. Everyone was engaged in asking the question of how would we shift the organization. If you have the same group of six or seven people constantly determining what the social justice work is going to be of the congregation, even if they come up with a big, bold, engaging idea, it's not going to work until you engage more people. So then we actually did a survey of the congregants. We had about 200 of the 350 members share with us what they were passionate about, what they would like to see happen. And then we interviewed members of the community outside of our congregation to ask them what were the issues that they felt were most important for us to be engaging with at this time. Where could Unitarian Universalists make a notable difference? And we went on to interview other Unitarian Universalist congregations across the country to find out what they were doing and what were the stories they were most proud of. And I won't repeat everything Nato said, but I will say those elements that he lifted up about education, service, advocacy, witness, and community organizing is what we heard back. And I'm going to add one other, which is fundraising that's attached to those goals. Because too often our fundraising is not an engine for change. It's just an opportunity to feel good on Sunday morning. But if it's linked to those other components, it can be very powerful. In fact, in Morristown, we had figured out that we had given away $65,000 one year, more than tithing to the community, and that we could actually fund a staff person in the community for something we wanted to affect change around. So big changes can happen when you recognize and integrate all those components together. And anything that we couldn't do that, we decided to actually not call it social justice. Not call it social justice. So we went through this process, a design phase, and you might write, this is sort of the process. So first we went through the learning phase that I was just describing. And then we went through a design phase to figure out what would this mean. And now, rather than having a social justice council of just 6 or 7 people, we have a team that's an engine for the other buckets. You might actually go to the next slide. This is what fell out of our work together. Economic justice, immigration justice, green earth ministry were the 3 buckets that fell out. And as a congregation, racial justice is the lens that we want to apply to these ministries, beginning with this year to come. And this is something that our congregation can do far more effectively. One person, Faye Waddleton Smith, made a choice to work for gender justice. A congregation of 350 people can make 3 choices. It's better to make focused choices, though, if we want to actually create a difference. And so all of these ministries now have, when we did this, we also were able to communicate clearly what our goals were in these various areas. And you know what happened? When we called for a meeting for the Immigration Justice Ministry to come together, we had 23 people show up that were not already engaged in social justice ministry. They had wanted to be involved in immigration justice ministry, but they couldn't figure out a way in. Then we called together a meeting for everyone who wanted to be engaged in looking at how the entire congregation, including our social justice ministries, might be changed through a lens of racial justice. 26 people showed up who had never been engaged deeply in that group of the Social Justice Council. What we found was by clearly communicating and making a decision about where we wanted to make a difference, people said, I can see myself there. That's what I want to do. I don't want to just do amorphous social justice. I want to show up for something that's meaningful, that I feel I have the skills to make a difference in. And so this was a very powerful shift, and it's been really recent, too. I mean, this has been the project of this last year. And so I really encourage you to consider that. So our goals were inclusion, focus, collaboration, and impact. And I want to mention that one thing that we've asked ourselves in our strategic plan, we wanted to have spirit-centered social justice. Because one thing I'm encountering in my congregation, and actually you're absolutely right, Pam is right, we are in a very conservative part of New Jersey, and people become demoralized because it is so challenging to convince people about so many of the issues that we care deeply about as Unitarian Universalists. But when we lead When we lead with our spiritual center, we tap into a strength and a resilience that's not present sometimes in those who are organizing from a secular social justice angle. So now that is interwoven into all of our ministries as well. We don't just enter the conversation of immigration justice or racial justice and environmental justice as an individual. We stand on the shoulders of others who have put their lives, been willing to take risks for the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. I think sometimes Unitarian Universalists will say those words, well, and people look at our covenant, the seven principles, and say, gosh, what is there to disagree with? But what they really invite us to do is to make love visible in the world. And the second thing is that we need to gather for spiritual practices that bring resilience. So after going out into the world and leaning into these pressing issues, to come back, to refresh, to renew one another, not only with spiritual practices, but with that vision of the beloved community, which has been our spiritual theme of the year. What does it look like to build the beloved community? That is the work not only of one lifetime, but several lifetimes. And looking at our work in Morristown, not only what we're doing today, but what we did in the 1960s and moving forward to what we want to be doing in the future. So I think I'll end there.
Thank you so much. Rich, rich offerings there. Scott, please help us better understand community organizing.
Good afternoon. So I direct the Unitarian Universalist Advocacy Network of Illinois, which grew out of my work at Unity Temple, which I'll tell you about in a little bit. But we pronounce, it's spelled U-U-A-N-I, but we pronounce it U-U-N-I because it's all about the power that you, you, and I can create together. Yesterday, Reverend Barber talked about the heart problem we have in our country and the need for some electricity to revive our hearts again, to revive our pulse, to bring life to the movement of the heart that's needed. For me, relational organizing, person-to-person organizing, generates that divine spark among, between, within us that can ignite a larger movement. When we connect deeply about things we care about, there's a spark there that brings me alive, and I think it brings other people alive as well. So, again, I'm representing Alan Taylor, the senior minister at Unity Temple, who could not be here today. I spent a year working as their social justice minister. When I came there, Unity Temple had 7 or 8 or maybe 10 action teams for 7 or 8 or 10 issues, and that sounds familiar, right? Representatives met for a monthly meeting once a month to share information, because that's what committees do. They meet once a month to share information. I came in saying, I would like to bring together my history with social activism, which hadn't always been very effective, but has always been important to me, with my deep love for spiritual community, and find a way to bring these two together in a way that is both powerful in the world and meaningful at a personal and communal level. When I told Alan this, he said, well, why don't you go to a community organizing training with a local organization, Community Renewal Society, which taught me the basic tools about and basic understanding that you need power to be effective in the world, and that power is rooted in relationships. The more people we can gather together in an organized fashion, the more power we have as one of the forms of power, and that the way to build relationships is really through conversation, that interaction, that divine spark that we can find amongst each other. What really caught my attention was the conversation or the training piece about agitation. And agitation has a lot of connotations, but at its heart, for me, what I got about it was that it's about a deep conversation where you get in touch with your core values. You hear each other's deep stories and learn what really matters to each other. And then you start to explore, so how is that or is that not being played out in your life and in the community that you're part of? And you explore, so how could we actually start to take action on what we care so deeply about at a deep level? Agitation at its best is an act of love. dusting off all the stuff that gets on top of our values, all the work and the childcare and the things that get in the way of really being able to act on our values. It's cutting through all that and agitating each other into action. But it comes out of a spiritual practice of conversation, which to me is a spiritual practice grounded in relationship, which is very UU theology for me. Grounded in relationship in a way that builds community as it builds power. And both of those create power to be effective in the world. So anyways, I came back from this training and gathered a few handful of folks, four or five folks, who were interested in doing something. And I suggested, how about we see if we can invite people to a congregational training about some of these concepts, but really about inspiring each other into action. Those four or five people ended up getting 40 people to come to the congregational training. It's a large congregation, 600 members. 40 people showed up for the training. And then I said, so how about we invite the whole congregation to come to the Martin Luther King Action the following month with this community organization? And as these 40 people started inviting other people, I knew we had hit critical mass when I overheard at coffee hour two members talking to each other about whether they're going to go to this social action next month, and neither one of them had had anything to do with social action before. I knew we'd hit critical mass because it became the buzz at coffee hour. Almost 100 people showed up for that action. First time. That had not happened before, right? That was powerful in itself for the congregation. It was even more powerful to be in the same room with 1,000 other people from 40 other congregations, most of whom were there because they too had had one-to-one conversations, had been personally invited by somebody else to come to the meeting. And it was a meeting that was across racial lines. It wasn't just us. It was all of us together in a way that was in which we could live out our solidarity and our accountability to other communities. It was empowering for us as a congregation. It was empowering together, and yet it wasn't yet effective because it needed a plan, and the plan was in place too. The plan was, of course, to invite legislators to come, and inviting them, again, through one-on-one conversations, to come and commit to a platform of certain legislative asks we had. And then the plan was to follow up on that by bringing hundreds of folks to the state capitol across the various congregations and talk to every legislator at the state capitol, hit the whole legislature. Unity Temple bought 30 people, and we crowded into Senator Harmon's office. And you could barely fit 30 people in his office, but it was so powerful to have 30 UUs in conversation directly in his office. And he was so impressed that his relationship with us changed at that moment, I believe. He started to listen to Unity Temple more. It's like before we had been a nice Frank Lloyd Wright temple that he would go and advocate for, get some dollars here and there maybe. Now we were a force to be reckoned with. A friendly force, to be sure, but a force to be reckoned with. And he became a champion in a way that he had not been before for our issues. And then, of course, there was a plan for a legislation, and the legislation to seal the records of those who had been incarcerated previously when they applied for employment. The legislation passed as the result of all those efforts. And so there was a path to employment for people who had not been able to be employed before. It was a success at that level as well. But the important thing to me is that we didn't organize around that issue. We organized around relationships, and we organized around our values. We were about rooting ourselves in love, without which political action can just be reckless and abusive, as Martin Luther King says. And we organized to build power. And of course, love without power is simply sentimental and anemic, as King says. Love and power together are what we're about. So we organized around relational love to build political power, frankly. And so when the marriage equality campaign came knocking at Unity Temple's door, and there was no action team, believe it or not, for LGBT issues at Unity Temple at the time. Of the 10 issues, somehow LGBT issues weren't one of those 10, because it was assumed we're all on board with that, I think. But the marriage equality campaign came asking, knocking at the door, saying, can you turn out people for a rally at your legislator's office next week? We had no team in place to do that around that issue. But because we had started a pattern and developed actually a network, a racial relational network, we turned out 40 people over a weekend in front of his office. Out of the 100 people that showed up, 40 of us were UUs. Within a week, that legislator who had been on the fence with marriage equality came out in favor, and marriage equality passed in Illinois by one vote. So we know that we made a difference. And of course, the issues are important, but that wasn't where we started. So the next year, what to me was really gratifying was the next year after I had left, the village board had a new leadership and was reneging on their commitment to green energy, wanted to go back to fossil energy. Unity Temple folks showed up in force, 36 people I think it was, to a village board meeting and said, no, not in our community, and got them to reverse their policy on green energy. Again, the congregation knew it made a difference because they had showed up in force out of their values, out of their relationships, and turned that into political power. It really is about that to me. It's about the spiritual basis of our connection with each other around our values, translating that spiritual and relational power into political power. And it's not just a one-way thing. There's value in becoming a stronger spiritual community in itself, becoming beloved community in itself, as NATO talks about. That to me is part of what drives me, is community feeds me. I need the community that's connected at that level to continue the work. And the work is important too, but without the basis, it's not as strong and it's not as long-lasting. So it's not, of course, all success stories. The challenge is still how to deepen and to sustain this work. I'm trying to do it at a statewide level, and we're continuing to work at Unity Temple to do this. When I was there, we had a retreat where we did start to do some visioning work. What is our common vision among the 8 to 10 teams trying to do different things? What's the common vision? And we came up with some common statements, one of which the most memorable was, we're here to boldly heal ourselves and each other. And then we came up with, well, we actually mined the UU Social Justice Empowerment Handbook for the criteria, the GAFO criteria. And if you're familiar with the GAFO criteria, G is for grounding. Are we acting grounded in our values and our commitments as UUs? A, are we accountable to those communities most impacted by our action or inaction? F, is this the kind of action that fits who we are as a congregation and as UUs? And O, is there a political opportunity in the world for us to actually achieve some measurable difference? GAFO. We're exploring adding I to that. Intersectionality. Is there a way that this intersects with all the other issues that we need to be addressing? So we developed some sense of vision, some sense of criteria for what's going to guide our action, and we developed a structure. UTCAN, Unity Temple Congregational Action Network. Instead of having 8 to 10 action teams under a committee, let's become a united force that's all about building power based on relationships, based on values. It is still in process, to be very honest, and so it's not a very clean and easy thing to make happen, but it is there and it is in process. Just to finish up, what we're exploring now, because we're never there, we're always in process. I'm really interested in exploring how a small group process can help to sustain us beyond the one-on-one process, which is actually, frankly, very hard to sustain over time. How can we develop small groups so we're actually meeting with each other, having these conversations at a deeper level on a regular basis in ways that sustain us? Praxis communities of not just doing spiritual growth, not just planning the next action, but bringing those two together, reflecting on what we've done, planning what we're doing next, coming back, asking what did we learn, what do we need to know, what did we blow, what do we succeed with. Exploring how to develop deeper partnerships, again, for the long term, not just showing up for the issue of the moment. And then, of course, looking for ways to implement this power beyond simply the legislative sphere. Community organizing, of course, has traditionally been focused on legislative action. That's only a tiny slice of the puzzle of what we need to be doing about today, I think. It's a movement moment. We need all the tools in the toolbox to bring them together. Thank you.
Thank you. Lots and lots of good material there. We'd like to open up the microphones, and please step up to the mic if you have a question, and we'll have a few minutes for Q&A and discussion. Welcome.
Bruce Wiggins, First Unitarian Society, Milwaukee. This was terrific, but a lot to absorb. So my question, maybe for Pam, is I think we can get this on recording, but probably not with the slides. So I'm wondering if there's a way, either through UUSC or something, to get both the slides and the audio, which I think is not typical.
Your wish has already been thought of, Bruce, and Beth Casebolt has been very graciously both videotaping this, and she is going to work with our slides to sync the audio with the slides, and both will be available in different formats, and you can certainly come to the UUSC website in about July, and we'll have that there. It'll be part of actually a whole series of resources that we'll have in our Justice Building pages. So thank you. So look for that. Yes, ma'am.
Can I just ask a follow-up? Where can we get the social justice handbook that several of you alluded to?
UUA.org. But it may not have the special NATO Hollister analysis. Yes, ma'am.
Barbara Garnes, Newburyport, Massachusetts. I think my question is for you, Allison. When you talked about redesigning the social justice from eight members, what did you use first, a community organizing within the congregation, and then community organizing to bring outsiders into those groups?
Actually, the first thing we did, even before we set up the Reinvention Task Force, was have a leadership retreat for the whole congregation solely focused on social justice. And then out of that experience, we realized that we needed some truths were told. And I'm going to say this because I think it's important. I don't know. We had six or seven people that really were doing fabulous social justice, and people felt on the outside and unable to affect choice and change. And that was actually really hard. I want to acknowledge that moving from a six or seven people committee to really putting it in the hands of 100 people now are shaping this ministry was big. And then we did, the Reinvention Task Force met with representation from every part of the congregation. Yes, they interviewed had meetings throughout the year with the members of the congregation, with different areas of the congregation, with members of the larger community to find out who we had relationships with, to talk about how we had been most helpful and supportive in the past, what made sense for us to do in the future. We interviewed other Unitarian congregations as well. So it was really a wide-sweeping effort to reflect on what to change.
Okay, but outside community members were not a part of the congregation.
Correct,
group.
Yes. Okay. Non-Unitarian Universalists who are engaged in the community as well, in justice work in the community. And in the congregation, I think it's important, one thing I want to lift up for that question, being mindful that we need to be accountable to the communities that we want to be in relationship and we want to serve, and so mindful of the people in our congregations who are part of that community. All the time, I think we, NATO said this, you know, to help those people, and then we render invisible the people in our congregation, first of all, that are struggling with those issues, and so accountability to people inside and outside of the congregation that were, for example, part of the Immigrant Rights Collective.
So my question, sorry, I'm Jasmine from Towson Unitarian Universalist. My question is about what challenges did you face as you moved from this sort of scattered, siloed approach toward social justice to a more unified movement within the congregation, and how did you address those challenges?
One of them is embedded in our UU culture. We have individualistic tendencies. Things are important to some of us that aren't always important to others of us. And what I think the challenge is how to develop that sense of we're all in this together. We are in a common, we're all in the same struggle together.
how to develop that intersectionality amongst us instead of seeing us in these silos. It just is a challenge that is just a cultural reframing we need to do.
Scott, is there a particular technique you use to help foster that?
Conversation. Lots and lots of conversation. I can't say that we've succeeded entirely, frankly.
Uh-huh. Can I say that very quickly? I'm a member of this congregation and was there before and after Scott.
Can you please go to the microphone? Okay. Or stand up and that's okay.
What I want to say is that I have an Australian shepherd. And if you know about Australian shepherds, they're like, it's a herding breed, and they sort of nip you around and get you organized. And they'll help you go where they want you to go. That was Scott Ossing. He was like our little shepherd. We were like a bunch of cats. But the shepherd was like a really true herding dog. And it was amazing.
Well, and I guess the thing to take out of that then is you can't solve everything in large meetings. There are some things that you just have to start working through at a one-to-one or small group level.
Allison or Nito, did you want to also respond to that?
I have a quick thing, but I would say some of the shifts were pastoral conversations and helping people see, but I want to give a useful example. It turns out that our Seeds of Peace ministry was engaged more meaningfully with a community organization beyond the congregation. And there were a few really excited people. And at the same time, they did offer incredibly powerful educational programs. So we sat down and had a conversation, and now we actually celebrate that the Seeds of Peace ministry, at least currently, there was a time when it was much more of a social justice comprehensive program, is now one of our lights in the adult education program. And so they were doing that really well, so we named that and blessed the members in the congregation to be engaged in the community. We weren't saying, you, person, can't do this because we've made these selections as a community. So we blessed them to do that work in the world. But as a congregation, we're trying to focus on those things. So.
Nato, did you want to say anything?
She said it better.
Oh, okay, great. I want to make sure that everyone's question at least gets raised. So what I'm going to do, just in honor of the time, is to invite everyone standing to ask your question, and the panelists will listen carefully to all three, and then we'll respond together. So please.
My name is Kent Hemmons-Seleska, and I serve the congregation as minister in the UU Church of Minnetonka in Wayzata, Minnesota. I'm struggling to figure out what social justice looks like in a very wealthy suburb. It's so wealthy that I cannot live in that suburb. I live about 5 miles away in another town. For about the last 9-10 years, we've been working on trying to make a building project happen. We had legal issues and sued the city, which was a social justice thing in itself. We used federal law around some things. And we're finally going to be able to break ground this summer. But I'm like, as I think about this, so we put a lot of resources into that for a lot of years, and now I'm feeling myself shift towards much more programming kinds of things and what that might look like. And, we've been doing some things. We started with Beloved Conversations this year for the first time. So it's not that we haven't done anything, but I'm struggling with how to shift that focus and what to do in a very wealthy suburb. Where there aren't, I suspect there's needs that I'm not aware of, first of all, but what do you do when, we could travel? We're the only church in the whole western suburbs, northwest to southwest of Minneapolis. So we draw from a wide area. We don't have a sense of town identity because we're from a lot of different places. So.
Great. Thank you. I think probably all of us will have some ideas about that. Next question.
I'm Melissa Marion Linday. I'm the Board of Trustees President from UUCA in Atlanta. What I heard was a lot of talk about what essentially really is culture shift, about how to get this done in your organization. And I don't know everybody else, but I find that to frequently be one of the toughest things to have to do. So really it's just a factual question for Allison and anybody. What span of time would you say from when you first realized, oh, hey, we need to do something different to, and I'm sorry, Allison, I just remember your screen with the three buckets and things,
sure.
But I know you all talked about it, to where you would say you were on a now fully developed new path and moving forward and making progress.
Hi, I'm Reverend Jean Lloyd, formerly of Mattituck UU Society in Woodbury, now of Madison UU Society in Shoreline. These are both in Connecticut. I just want to identify that we used the UUA social justice empowerment model several years ago. We had the fractured social justice programs prior to that. Excellent resource. One of my intentions all along was to ultimately find a way for individuals in the congregation to continue to pursue their particular passions, but we needed to get the new structure in place first, and it had to be built on a covenantal community. Once that was done and set in place, we were able to use Gilbert's model to say to the congregation, if you have your own particular special thing you want to do, come to what was by then called the Social Justice Coordinating Team, which was intended to keep an eye out on everything that was going on in the congregation, and fill out a one-page form, get two or three other people with you to pursue this particular venture. And you will then have the support and the newsletter and maybe a little funding along the way from the congregation. So it's not a question. It's just sometimes it has to be a one way for a while, but if I found it important to ultimately bring it space to the other projects that people were passionate around, and it helped unify the congregation, and they felt proud and supportive of it.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the final two women to be really succinct in your question or comment, please, so we can have sufficient time for responses.
Hi, my name is Liz Dale. I'm actually a USC liaison with my congregation.
Great, thank you.
My congregation is the UUFS in Salisbury, Maryland. We're a small congregation. Our cluster is Delmarva, and my question basically is geographic. Our cluster is between two different states, Delaware and Maryland. And a lot of our members that are active, you know, don't want to do work in Delaware because we're in Maryland, you know. And then they don't want to go over the bridge to Annapolis because that's so far away. So it's kind of difficult to join, you know, better together with the people that we're with. It just seems like there's some barriers there. So how do we deal with that?
How do you deal with geographic
challenges?
Thank you.
And attitudes, too.
Oh, well, attitudes can be stronger than the actual physical geography, right? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Linda, and I'm from the heart of Detroit, First Church. NATO, you said something about people that were providing food for those who were hungry to develop relationships, and that was important. Relationships among the different people from different groups that were providing the food, or relationships with the people who were receiving the food? And if that's the case, how did you do that?
All right. And we have probably 5 minutes to answer all of those questions, because I would like to spend just a little bit at the end in terms of some resources and further opportunities. So our guests also, I can't speak for their schedules, but they may be able to stay a little bit later to have some conversations one-on-one. But why don't we start with Scott? And Scott, do you have any comments related to any of those questions you'd like to share?
I'll take a stab at the wealthy congregation, which is actually from a neighboring suburb that I grew up in. My pat answer would be agitation. But in a real way, I think it's about an affluent congregation, which, again, I own, as that's my background and culture, too. What kind of world do I really want to see? What do I really passionately, deep within me, want to see in the world? Not just for me, hopefully, but hopefully, you know, for my children, if nothing else. If I need to appeal to self-interest, I'll go to your children. But I think most of us care about something more than us and our kids. We want to see something happen in the world. So what is that? How can we tap into what making that really real for us? That would be one level, is doing some visioning and some agitation around the visions that we have. The other piece, of course, would be developing relationships with those who are outside of our bubbles, if that's what they are. how do we really get in relationship? Well, it's a chicken and egg. At some level, we need to do our own work so we can be in right relationship with people outside of our culture. And yet, at some level, we just need to take the risk and step out and say, how can we partner? How can we be of service? How can we just show up to start with? So I think just showing up would be a good place for the congregations to start and start to develop relationships that way.
Great. I'm just going to piggyback on that. If you take a look at the photo, the young man standing right next to me with the beard is Jack Gade. Jack is an awesome ministerial intern with Moose Jaw, which is the state advocacy network in Minnesota. We're working with them to have a social justice training next spring, and I bet he could be an ally to you now, along with Ashley Horan, who's the executive director of Moose Jaw, in helping to build those relationships and develop some sensibilities and next steps forward in that. Allison, what would you like to respond to?
Well, I'll try to be very succinct and say a couple things connected to those questions. So one, the culture change one felt directed to me in part. I would say that it took a year for the leadership to really understand what was going on, frankly, in terms of power dynamics in the congregation, and to really understand it themselves and why we needed to shift towards a spiritually based, integrated throughout the congregation, focused, inclusive social justice program. The next year, it was conversations with the congregation as a whole. And then, not unexpectedly, there were some tensions that arose. And then it did turned out that it wouldn't take a month to resolve, like the leadership thought. And then really a year of shifting towards a new model. And so I would say 2 years. But that work is what got the buy-in, so that people are excited and showing up. And I would say 6 out of the 7 people are really also can't believe that they've been railing that what they needed was new volunteers. And they would say it at the top of their lungs as loud as they could, and it would never happen. And now it's finally happening. And so they're so excited to feel the groundswell. So that's made a shift. And one other quick thing about the forms, and I'm so glad that was mentioned. Very clear forms that we've created so that there's an on-ramp for new ideas. The 3 areas of focus may not be eternal, like for the next 100 years. And so there's a clear way to get something started and also an evaluation to determine when it's time to sunset something. And sunsetting might be sunsetting it to somewhere else in the congregation. So that's so important.
Thank you. Nato, what would you like to offer some wisdom about?
These are all really worthy things to talk about, and in the interest of time, I'll give a quip-like answer to the one of how we built relationships with the folks who were formerly recipients of food and are now participants in a food distribution community. And the quick answer is what we did was show up, shut up, and get our hands dirty. So the best thing we can do is show up consistently, and with our ears open, listen, and really shut up. So and that takes often takes a really long time, because what we're talking about is building trust. My partner was involved in community engagement around AIDS research and was working to meet with the executive director of an organization that represented many heavily researched people in the community, many people of color, gay men, and my partner went to go meet with this person, and she showed up and the director was not there, and she waited for half an hour, you know, maybe I can come back another time, and then finally someone else came out and said, the director is in this other room setting up for an event. Can you go say hey to her in there? So my partner went in there, and the director saw her and was like, oh great, you're here. We need someone to help serve hot dogs for this event. Can you do that? And so my partner put on plastic gloves and served hot dogs at an event for 4 hours and went home. Sorry, we couldn't meet. Maybe another time. She made another meeting with the director a couple weeks later, and she came in on time, and the director said, I did that to test you. because everyone comes here trying to get access to this community, and they're self-serving, and they take advantage of these people. So I was testing you to see if you were yet another one like that. So that's a really a powerful image. Show up, shut up, and be willing to serve hot dogs.
Even if you're a vegetarian.
Right, right. Yeah. Vegan hot dogs are great, too.
Thank you. Those are really great answers. I just wanted to spend the last couple of minutes sharing quickly a few resources that UUSC has to offer. And then a couple of closing words. One of the new initiatives of Justice Building that we're really, really excited about, and I realize we're not going to have a time today to talk much about, but both Scott and Allison are part of our first class of Justice Building innovators. UUSC is investing in very intensive leadership cultivation and coaching of people. We are taking congregations wherever they are in the spectrum of experience and impact and working with the senior minister and someone who has applied and been accepted to take that congregation to a much higher level of performance in terms of greater ambition, in terms of skill building and capacity, in terms of impact. Justice Building innovators who are accepted work with us for 18 months to 3 years. They meet in person periodically for training and networking. They get personal coaching calls once a month. The sponsors get calls. I know we have some JBIs here at GA. If you're a JBI in the room, would you please stand up so we can say hi? All right, great, okay. We have 16 JBIs. They are an awesome, awesome, amazing group. Some of them are doing individual congregational projects. Some are doing projects related to clusters because that's how their organizations and congregations can work more effectively. And three projects relate to working at a statewide level, which is also really neat. So talk to Allison, Scott, myself, or any of the JBIs. The JBIs are going to be at the UUSC booth at 2:45 for about a half an hour, so for a meet and greet, and they can explain a little bit more about what they're doing and why they got excited and how to get involved. I also want to say we have a space on the Justice Building page at UUSC for resources in terms of tools you can use for discernment and diagnosing what's going on in your congregation.
What's the JBI?
The JBI is the Justice Building Innovator. Right on the screen. We are also partnering with the UUA to start to produce a set of online justice skill building courses next year through the UU Leadership Institute. We're really, really excited about that. We're in conversation. First Parish Concord in Massachusetts has taken over a year to do a national study of how UU congregations raise money for social justice and how they spend money for social justice. We wanted to have them as part of the panel, but they didn't finish their work quite yet. But we have an agreement with them when their report is final. It will also go up on our Justice Building Innovator webpage that everyone can have access to. I also just want to say, let's see, I think that's it. So I would like to leave you with a few words to summarize what I heard in terms of the wisdom of our great presenters. To go forth with vision, to go forth focused on capacity building, not issues, to be spiritually and values grounded. Need my glasses. To engage in covenantal relationships, to build community and to build power, to take risks. And I love Rumi, and one of his quotes charges us all to be notorious. So UUs are known for showing up. So let's show up, build some more power, and go out there and be notorious. Thank you very much.